Welcome to Babbittville Radio, a place where you'll hear great conversations with the world's best and most inspirational runner, triathletes, and cyclists. Endurance lives here. Now, here's your host, USA Triathlon and Ironman Triathlon Hall of Famer, Bob Babbitt.
Babbitt.
How often do we talk to one of the pure legends of running? Probably, I don't think it's out of line to say America's greatest marathoner.
No question about it.
Four-time winner of New York, four-time winner of Boston, Mr. Boston, Billy Rogers. Billy, how you doing?
Hey, hi, Paul and Bob.
Hey, Bill.
Great to be on your show.
Great to have you on. We're both like, we're running geeks, so we are big, big fans.
Been running geeks for a long, long time.
Yeah, no. I sort of feel a little bit, well, not like a dinosaur, because runners don't kind of go extinct. We sort of keep running. We slow down a lot, but I'm definitely older. But it's that's okay, too. That's part of the sports, I think, today.
You know what, though, Bill? Slowing down is relative. Someone like you doesn't seem to have slowed down nearly as much as the rest of us.
That's right. That's right. And you're a lot faster than any of your relatives.
That's what I'm
guessing. Now, yeah. Billy, going way back. Did you know pretty early that you had a propensity for running? Was that of all the sports we all get involved with as kids?
Yeah.
You knew pretty early that, okay, this is
my
calling.
I like all kids, like you said, you know, played a lot of different sports for fun. It was just pure fun for me and, recreational type activity. But in the gym class 1 mile as a 15-year-old or 10th grade, I was the fastest kid in the school. So yes, I that motivated me to join the cross country team with my brother, my best friend. It was very low key. It wasn't even a varsity sport type of thing. But we didn't run a lot of mileage, but we had a good coach. And so I was one of the lucky kids to be able to be on a team in high school in a certain sense, you know. And that kind of kicked off my running, really.
Bill, I'm just curious, at the 10th grade, what did you run for that mile that sort of you discovered you had some talent for that?
Well, my first mile was on a grass track. I ran 5:20.
And I'm assuming that's like no training, right? I mean, that's just sort of you do your normal day-to-day playing around and go out and run a mile in 5:20.
Yeah, not really training, you know.
Right, and it's probably just wearing probably Chuck Taylors, probably wearing just regular old running.
I don't think it was Chuck Taylors. It wasn't those. No, it wasn't. I don't know if I ever wore those.
They were probably leather, though, right?
Yeah, something like that.
That is so funny. So, Bill, with the Greater Boston Track Club, when did that get going, and how did you immerse yourself with that group?
What happened was after college, I quit running my senior year because I didn't figure I'd ever be part of a running team again. And I was used to running with a team, with a group of other runners. And after college, you know, the abyss is kind of there, you know.
Sure.
What the heck?
What do you do? And that's still there.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
It is.
It's like always there. But I moved to Boston and saw the Boston Marathon for the first time. I'm from Hartford, Connecticut originally, about 100 miles away. And I saw the marathon, and though my college roommate, Ambrose Burfoot, now an editor at Runner's World, had won Boston 68, I didn't really have a clue about the marathon. But when I saw that race, that motivated me after a two-year layoff to kind of quit smoking. I had become a smoker and so on, and start running. I joined a YMCA, start running a bit, and that was it. It was not a straight. You know, I didn't have success right away. My first marathon, I dropped out. And it took me a while to kind of learn road racing, to get used to the different weather, you know, that sort of thing.
Right.
Bill, I recall a story, and I don't know if this was from your book, Marathoning, about you running a race, and I don't know if it was a marathon, maybe it was a 10-miler or something, but you ran this thing in jeans.
Yeah, it was 30K.
30K.
Yeah, 18 miles because it was in February, and I was like many runners in that era. You know, it wasn't a professional sport then. We couldn't earn income or anything. And I was kind of poor at the time and had no money, so I just ran in my jeans, you know.
I love that.
You know, for people listening out there, go ahead and put your Levi's on and head down to your local 30K road race and see how that – Bill, how was the chafing that day?
Actually, it was a cold day. It was February, you know. But actually, my old college roommate, Ambrose Burfoot, he won the race. He won a pair of tires from a local car dealer.
and probably got DQ'd from ever participating in amateur sports for it.
That's funny.
I don't think any of us had a car, so I don't know what happened to the tires. But from there, that set me up to run my first marathon, and I joined the Greater Boston Track Club about a year later, and that's when I bumped into Coach Billy Squires, who helped runners like Alberto Salazar and Greg Meyer and so on.
And did Bill say, hey, Bill, why don't you think about a pair of shorts? Yeah, and that was like the first great coaching advice you got.
Lose the Levi's, baby. You'll run faster.
Yeah, lose the Levi's. Well,
you know what I like, Babbitt, is this is the first guy I've ever known who can call Ambie Burfoot Ambrose.
Right.
Yes. I that's how I call him. I call him both names. We're good buddies, of course, still.
Yeah.
But in terms of the gear, ironically, Frank Shorter started the first
running wear company
in the U.S. in 1976. And a year later, I started a company called Bill Rogers and Company, a clothing line.
Sure.
Also, and we kind of competed head-to-head, and my company's kind of, that company's gone now, but he's still around, I believe.
It's had a few different owners over the years.
Yeah, so that's what I did. I went from jeans to some real gear, and we got into Gore-Tex suits, and of course, discovered you can run in the winter and be comfortable, and you know today it's wonderful. You know, you can, nothing stops you. You know,
you mentioned Frank Shorter, and through the years, were some of your greater events or greater races with Shorter?
Absolutely, yes, because Frank was defending Olympic champion,
right?
And 72 Olympics, 76, we were both on the Olympic team.
Right.
He beat me by 7 seconds in the trial. We gapped the third-place guy by 2 minutes or so, Don Cardong.
Sure.
But in the Olympics, I bombed out. But Frank and I, we dueled a lot. We were very even. Our personal bests were very close in the marathon. And, for example, at the Falmouth Road Race, I won 3 out of 5 with him. He beat me twice there, you know, and we dueled a lot at races around the country, the Boston Marathon, you know, everywhere. So that was great fun, you know, it was great fun. And he still races today. I still see Frank. Actually, you know, we were talking earlier, Paul, about the Kona and the Ironman Marathon. I was out there for a half marathon this year, and he and I both ran that.
Both ran the half over in Kona?
Yes.
What'd you think?
I thought it was great. It was a beautiful little town. I liked to ride on the ocean, you know, went out there with my kids and that sort of thing. And we just had a great, fun time. But it's a good race, a good beginner's race, I think, you know.
Bill, back in the day when you're racing Frank, there's obviously some camaraderie there. But how much competitive fire was there between you two? I mean, was there you guys any trash talking on the side or any just, you know, man, I just want to kill this guy when I get out there?
No, what it was at first, you know, at first there was the veneration sort of thing, and I really, you know, I took my hat off to Frank, and I was nowhere near him, you know. But finally, in one race, I made our World Cross Country team, and Frank won that trial to compete in the World Cross Country Championships, and 7 of us made the team, and I tied for 4th. But in the race itself, 3 weeks later, I took a bronze medal for the United States.
Ah,
I beat Frank.
Nice.
Frank took 20th place. And from that point on, I was able to get free shoes. I went with Asics. I ran for them for 5 years. And from that point on, I was able to, you know, at least I felt I had a chance to compete with Frank Shorter, you know. But we've become buddies since then. We competed in business with our clothing line
right.
a little bit.
Right, yeah.
But we're friends, you know. We're both in our 50s now. We've both been through the competitive road race wars, the marathons all over the world, you know.
Yeah.
And you find out what that sport's like and everything. But there's life beyond that. But when you're in that focus, that little fishbowl kind of world, it's a different world, and you're totally submerged in it, you know. And I loved it in a way, but it's very tough. It's very hard on you, I think, psychologically, you know.
Now, Bill, the competitive side again of this of running is so tough. When you went to the starting line, mm-hmm. and obviously you were famous as one of those guys who's just nice to everybody, shaking everybody's hands, and I think to a certain degree,
who's that?
That must be Shorter.
Yeah.
Shorter's going, he never shook my hand. No, I'm just nice to everybody. Just one of those guys. And then, you know, sort of people like, oh, God, Rogers is really nice. I'm going to kick his ass.
Yeah.
But deep down, you knew everybody who was around, you knew how fast these guys could run. You had a sense of, you studied the other guys. You had a sense of of who you were going to end up being with at mile 25 of this marathon.
Yeah, yeah, that's pretty sure, yeah. And, you know, usually I'm a friendly person, but, you know, but in racing, that was what I got into, and I got into the marathon, and I wanted to win, you know, and Frank did too, and everyone else that was aiming to, you know, try for these races. And so, yeah, you learn your competition, and you try to train for it. You've got to train, and and the better prepared you are, the better you can duke it out race day, you know. I mean, we saw the success of Dina Castor and Meb Kesfleggi in the Olympics, and they showed that once again that Americans can be among the best in the world, and that's exciting, you know.
Bill, do you remember one particular race where the competitive, I don't know, whoever you were racing, it was such a tight race, and you guys went back and forth, and it was just like the culmination of what you think of when you think of being competitive in an event, and who was it with?
I've had a lot of races that were close. I had one Boston in 78 where I was racing. I had broken away in the lead. Fortunately, of course, I knew the course, you know. It was my fourth or fifth time, and but I hadn't won it since 75, but I broke into the lead around 17 miles. But around 25 miles, the motorcycle cop turned to me and said, "Someone's closing on you fast." I looked behind, I saw a red uniform, and I started pushing. It was like that bad dream where you can't move and your legs. It was just like that, and I was pushing, and this guy was gaining so fast. It turned out to be Jeff Wells, a runner from Texas.
Yeah. Yep.
And he closed to within 2 seconds of me at the finish line. Oh. With another 50 yards, he would have gone right by me, you know.
Oh.
It was an incredible finish. That's my closest marathon finish.
Well, and running scared like that, there's nothing worse.
Yeah, that was intense. Fortunately, it was a very cool day, and you know, I hadn't been broken down by the weather or anything. I'd broken into the lead. We ran 2:10 that day, 2:10:13, 2:10:15. So today the times are faster, but
not that much.
Not in the U.S.
Yeah,
yeah, it's not too much faster. I mean, there's the occasional, you know, great runners from Kenya. I think the courses are all a little different too. You've got the Berlin, London, Chicago marathons.
Right.
They're very fast. The old style marathon courses, like the Olympic marathon, you know, Dina ran. They're kind of like Boston or New York and everything.
Well, and I think what people forget, and I remember one time we had Frank on the show, and we were talking about there was a lot of great times in the early 80s in marathons.
Oh, yeah.
And a lot of that was you had great weather. And so much of it is you have a Boston starting at high noon, and if it's 70, 80 degrees, you're done.
Yeah.
There's not a heck of a lot. I don't care who you are. You're not running 206, 207 on those type of days. So much is the weather.
This year, in fact, Paul, it was 86 degrees at the start in Boston.
Unreal.
One year in 76, it was 100 degrees at the start.
That's not Boston. That's Phoenix.
Yeah. Yeah. What the heck is that? Actually, last year, I ran Boston last year in my Elvis outfit with Will Ferrell. And,
nice.
It was hot last year. Of course, in the Elvis outfit, pretty much.
I was going to say, it's always hot. You're always in the sauna when you're in the Elvis outfit. I mean, the wig alone is enough to kill you.
Bill, when did you see the influx of the Kenyan runners?
Yeah.
You know, all of a sudden, things changed. I mean, American, think between yourself and Frank and Alberto, the Americans were dominating marathon.
Yeah. And then Joan Benoit-Samuelson and Patty Catalano on the women's side, also great challengers to Greta White, you know, or Andrew Christensen. But the great African runners were always there on the track. I raced Henry Rono in a half marathon in San Blas, Puerto Rico in 78.
Yeah.
And we duked it out. I defeated four or five other Kenyan runners. But Henry and I were neck and neck with a half mile to go, and he outkicked me, you know.
Right.
But at that time, there still were not a lot of Kenyans. I'd go to the Falmouth Road Race. Maybe one Kenyan runner would be there, and he'd be a fellow who went to the college in the U.S., you know, not too tough.
Yeah,
and wasn't aiming to be a world-class runner. But once money came into the sport, it ballooned the entire sport. It built the sport. It enabled the second running boom to happen. We saw all these new changes happen in the sport, and the Kenyans and Ethiopians and other great runners from around the world, the runners from Mexico, for example, or Brazil, really started to push it and challenge the runners from around the world. So, but I think I didn't race too many African marathoners. You're right. It would have been really, really tough because they're great competitors and great athletes, you know.
Bill, speak a little bit to the quality of American distance running over the last 10 or so years compared to, everyone talks about the late 70s and early 80s.
Yeah.
We talked to Tony Revis, and he felt like one of the reasons, because we've discussed this with so many people, he felt maybe that the money that you just talked about that came into the sport, while it's been great for running generally, for at the professional level, at the very top, you know, the money that's there for Americans isn't as appealing because it's maybe it is
doesn't
not as
much
value-wise compared to an African or
it's true. I mean, that's a valid point. The public generally doesn't understand that, you know, that the amount of money going to a runner from a nation with an economy that's 1/100th of ours or something, where the dollar goes a lot farther than it does for an American.
Yes.
Small sport of ours. You know, the incentive for an American, I always have said that an American today could choose about any job sort of and make a better living at it in a certain sense as a starting something. But you don't get into the sport for money, though.
Right.
You know, it's not like all the other sports, the big commercial sports. But so I think it's great. Those races like the Falmouth Road Race, for example, gives prize money for Americans. Or those marathons that have really supported the Americans, like I saw that Chicago and New York City, for example, brought in Meb and Dina Castor.
Yeah.
You know, and I thought, I think that they cut their teeth there, and yet they were able to support themselves. And why shouldn't we help our athletes? We do that in the NBA and baseball, post-collegiately. We have coaches. We have programs. Now USA Track and Field has Team USA, and we're seeing some success. I think if the shoe companies or some other company would step up to the plate and become America's distance running marathon company,
right?
You know, and put some money into the kitty so we could hire some more coaches, we could develop some more depth and compete even more strongly on a worldwide basis.
You know, you talk about not doing it for the money, and I believe that 100%, especially for high schoolers and collegiate athletes.
Oh, yeah.
But eventually that becomes the reality of the situation. On the one hand, I like the argument that Americans should have access to money of their own at some races so they can support themselves. On the other hand, you'll get the argument that you're mollycoddling American athletes and allowing them to remain subpar compared to the rest of the world.
No, I totally disagree with that. I totally disagree with that. I really feel that, you know, in order to do your best, you really need training for this sport is so physically demanding.
Right.
Right.
You need to rest. If you're training twice a day, 130 miles a week, you know, you need to rest your body, and that means you really cannot train hard. The Kenyans, for example, if we look at our competition from Japan or Kenya, Russia, around the world, these athletes are full-time professional athletes. And I said that 20-some years ago. I said that any athlete who's working a 40-hour job is not going to beat me. And it was true.
Right.
Because I could commit to the sport, you know, heart and soul. And when you do that, that's when you find the best within yourself. You know, as you can produce your best. You are a professional, you know. So I think it's more, it's not mildly coddling our athletes. Let's find out who's the next Dina Castor. Who's the next Meb Kosgei or Alan Culpepper? You know, and we have a lot of talent. We have a lot of talent in this country. And we have a lot of great coaches, like Bob Stebany, who works with Team USA. And some of my friends, Greg Meyer, he was trying to get into coaching American distance running. There was nowhere to go. There was nowhere to go. So we need support. We need a little bit of financial support. And once we have that, we'll have more international success, as we saw in Athens with Dina Castor and
right.
Kosgei.
Well, it's interesting, too, because
I just believe that, you know.
No,
yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah.
And actually, the other side of it was, if you look back in the 80s when we had Athletics West and you had the best guys training together.
Yes.
And then you move forward to the Running USA programs that Dina and Meb were a part of, Running California. And actually, Shorter, remember when he was on with us, we asked him what the biggest problem was for American running, and he said it was agents, because the agents were keeping the top guys from training together. They were keeping them isolated rather than Culpepper training with Meb and getting together and pushing each other.
Feeding off each other.
You need, in the world of triathlon, during the summer, all the top guys are in Boulder because they who else is going to push them? They can't just get some local fodder out there. You got to have the best guys to push you to
so,
be the best.
So, you know, you hear the argument a lot that all the way down to the high school level that kids aren't willing to work hard anymore, that kids aren't willing to work as hard.
I don't believe that either.
So what has happened?
I do 25 races a year. Yeah. I was out in Orange County 2 weeks ago with Coach Bill Sumner, and I saw 1,000 boys and girls competing in a huge track meet in Laguna Hills. And they were pushing hard. It was 90 degrees that day.
Yeah.
I mean, those parents can be proud of their kids. I mean, they really pushed hard, and with coaches like Bill and around. No, I don't believe that.
So Bill, what then has happened to the depth in performance?
I think it was a temporary glitch when the other countries hit their running boom. Let's say, for example, Brazil. They didn't have any top marathoners when I ran the Rio Marathon back in 81 and won the race easily, and Greg Meyer won the year before. But a few years later, suddenly there was Ronaldo da Costa setting a world record, and they had a running boom, and people of Brazil started to get out there and run and work out, try to get fit, and we've seen that around the world. You know, it kind of kicked off here in the U.S. and then became more competitive. So in response, USA Track and Field on a competitive, professional level, we never really helped our athletes. We never, you know, we were able to compete when we had teams like Greater Boston Track Club, and when Nike did step up to the plate with Athletics West, and Frank Shorter had a running team. And there was great success there. But I think the challenge is even harder today for our athletes. It's a very international sport. It's like soccer.
Sure.
They're the two most international sports, I think. So we need to prepare our athletes and help them along so they can do their best, you know. And I think now the depth is coming out. I think you look at the 10K times that we're seeing on the track, on the road. The O'Neill sisters, for example. We saw a pretty good 10K at our trials, you know. People like Culpepper. Look at Dathan Ritzenhine. We've had a lot of talent over the years. I've never believed that we were weak, really, in the 80s at all or whatever. I mean, we had Bob Kempinen.
Right.
You know, we had Keith Brantley. We had guys run 208 to 211. But they were kind of overshadowed by the altitude-born athletes. And I think some races, in particular the Boston Marathon, I think there was too much of an emphasis on bringing in
foreigners.
Too many runners from maybe from Kenya.
Right.
I mean, as much as I admire the Kenyans, and I take my hat off to them, but I think always make it a very interesting race by bringing in the best Americans to challenge the great runners from Kenya. You know, and I think the Kenyans like that. They're competitive people, you know. And so I think we need to do that, and I hope Boston steps up to the plate. I did see Dan Brown talking with some of the sponsors at John Hancock, the great Boston Marathon sponsor. And so I think they are looking to reinvigorate the Boston Marathon that way.
Great.
And hopefully we'll have an American champion there. And I know Dina Castor and Meb are running New York this fall.
Right. That makes a huge difference.
Yeah.
Hey, Bill, I know that you were, like you mentioned, you were just out here in Orange County, and you were out here with Coach Bill Sumner, who's one of the most enthusiastic and guys who's done phenomenal stuff for kids running. You're involved with the OC Marathon, which is coming up December 5th, and actually my wife has already signed up, and it looks like it's going to be a phenomenal event.
Heidi's doing the marathon?
Heidi's
the
running
the
marathon.
Marathon.
Oh,
really?
Yeah. She's pumped up, baby. She says she's...
I'm not running the full event. No. Wild horses. Wild horses. I could be convinced to do one, but I have to think about it. I'm actually going to run probably a half marathon there. Or
oh, good!
Relay.
Outstanding.
Love that. So Bill, what do you know about this marathon, and what's your involvement?
Well, I've been out to Irvine a number of times. My fiance actually lived out there for a few years, and you know, I came out about a few weeks ago, met with some of the sponsors from Pacific Air and Allergan, other sponsors. And the community is really behind this event, not just some of the companies in Irvine, but also the community there. And by that I mean the government, local government behind it. And that's key, I think.
Oh, big time.
I see that, you know, Bill has also got a kids event. And so I hope that if anyone wants to volunteer, they could call the road race organizers.
Right, and that's actually 949-476
7076, and they can go to ocmarathon.com to find out all the information.
Or if you want to email somebody, info@calcoasttrack.com.
Absolutely. Yeah, I know there's a marathon and a half marathon. It's going to be a...
And a kids race.
Yep.
Bring your kids.
That's right.
Throw them in the race, and you may have the next Bill Rogers on your hands.
Absolutely. December 5th, 2004. Hey, Bill, when I was reading through your info on your career, and remembering back to just how some people panic on race day, something doesn't go right, a shoelace breaks, and you know, I'm looking at this, and like right before 76 New York City Marathon, you wake up at a friend's house and realize you don't have any running shorts.
Exactly.
And then at the 75 Cross Country Championships, you realize that you forgot your spikes, and you have to borrow some from Gary Tuttle. But I'm looking at it, and go, you go out and win the marathon, and you end up it's the second fastest time of your life. And in cross country, you end up you finished third in your first world class race. So were you able to just let things roll off your back? Not only things like that, but during the race, if you missed a handoff at an aid station, or you know your time was a little bit off of where you thought it could be, how did you handle those type of situations?
Right. I mean, I to this day think Gary Tuttle, you know, he had those spikes, a nice pair of Asics, in other words, and. This day, I mean, I think that was the best race of my life. I really believe everything is in your preparation, in your training. And once you have that, your confidence level is so high, it's hard to get knocked back. The only thing, it can happen. I mean, marathons in particular with tough weather, like hot, humid weather.
Yeah.
We saw that in Athens with Paula Radcliffe.
Sure,
The women's world record holder, and Paul Turgat, the men's world record holder, both having really tough days. And I had that happen to me in the Olympic marathon. I was ranked number one in the world in 75 and went into 76 Olympics hoping to medal. But, you know, it's a learning process, and it takes a while. It takes time. So if you're a beginning runner, for example, or a young kid getting into cross country, I say give yourself time and understand that no matter who you are, Paula Radcliffe or Paul Turgat, the best in the world.
Or Paul Huddle.
Or Bob Bennett.
They're going to fail.
Yeah, absolutely. I do it all the time.
So these things happen, so you understand that, and not things don't always go right, but you just do your best. If you tell yourself before your races, I'm going to just do my best, and then that's all you can ask of yourself, you know?
Bill, how difficult has it been, or was it, or is it still, I don't know, it seems like you've gotten through it really well. Is it for someone who's been as competitive as you've been, you know, been at the height of your sport, to continue on and stay involved and keep racing and have goals?
It's very easy for me, Paul and Bob, because I was very lucky that I won Boston and New York, for example. You know, I was able to break through, and you know, or someone like Frank Shorter or Joan Benoit won the Olympic Games. If you can do something like that, you know, maybe you have a chance to go on and maybe get an endorsement with a shoe company. And I was lucky because the running boom was on. And I was able to kind of ride that wave, and I love the sport. You know, I always have, always will. And I love to go to the schools, love to meet people like Coach Bill Sumner, love to be a part of the sport. And so that's easy for me. It's my job, but it's an easy job in a way. Being a competitive athlete, that is hard, I think. I think a lot of people don't understand until you get out there and lace up the shoes and you run a mile. Or then you try to pick up the pace, you know. Then you find out what a challenge running is as a sport, you know. And I think the great thing with the second running boom that is happening now is that Americans are doing that. They're really getting up and off the couch or whatever and saying, I'm going to try this. I can do it, you know. And that's the best thing that's happened in this sport, really.
And, you know, you see a lot of athletes, though, who have been where you've been, and they hang it up. They don't continue on. And I think a lot of times it's because – Not only because of their expectations and the fact that they feel like they're never going to be as fast as they once were, but also because you might get a lot of grief from the age groupers and the people you're now, if you want to still compete, you know, as far as them saying, hey, this isn't fair, I'm competing against Bill Rogers, you know?
Or I'm knocking him off.
Well, that's true, but I think a lot of people, majority, see it the other way. You know, it's like, well, great, Bill Rogers is here, how am I going to win, you know, the 55 to 59?
You know, it's very interesting. I've always been a very competitive runner, and I was recently at the Chicago Half Marathon, and they asked me to start at the back of the pack with the walkers. And I did that, and it took me 2 hours to do that half marathon, and I usually run a half in around 125 or something, or 120 or whatever.
Oh, just like me and Bob.
Yeah.
And I was just whipped.
Oh, yeah.
I was just whipped. It was very hard. So I think everyone runner needs to run the pace that's right for them.
Right.
And not go too fast or too slow. But I think in terms of competing in your future, I think, you know, if you have kids and the demands of the real world intervene, or maybe you get injured. And I was lucky in that I dodged injury for a long time. And so that was one reason why I was able to keep competing. And age group running does give you an avenue to do that. I ran as an age grouper in a half marathon in Providence this past weekend, and a fellow I've been running against for 30 years beat me.
Was it the first time for him?
A lot of people beat me these days, and sometimes it hurts a little. You know, your ego is involved, you know.
But you know what? It's going to make his day. After 30 years,
that's
of you
true.
Trouncing
that's the other
him,
side of it.
You give him one day, Billy.
Yeah.
The guy's exactly. Going home. He's putting it on his resume. He's emailing all his friends. I finally got him.
Bill, it'll years. Be good. That's for sure.
Bill, you make a great point there. When the rest of life starts to intervene, when you went from being competitive and making your living strictly from running, mm-hmm. to making your living more from the business side of things, from your clothing company and from other engagements.
Yeah.
What do you say to people who say, you know, I work 60 hours a week. I do this. I do that. You know, I don't feel like I can keep my running going. How did you handle that?
I take my hat off to them. I you know, what I did is I cut back my mileage and everything. As I got older, you have to.
Right.
You absolutely have to, of course. Everyone ages. And got it to age 40, and I started, you get to meet, there's a certain camaraderie. It takes a little bit, the competitive side, it doesn't slip, but it's not as all-consuming.
Yeah.
You know,
right.
It's not as all-important or something like that. But for the average person out there with a job, you know, and he's got kids and he's trying to change, or he or she is trying to change their life, you know, get fitter, this is a great sport. Because you don't need to run the full marathon or the half marathon. You can do 5Ks.
Right.
You can, which, for example, the Orange County Marathon, there'll be a 5K.
Yeah.
That's the distance that I started at, or even shorter.
Sure.
And you don't need to do this long, long haul, you know. And so that's what I would tell folks. And I mean, today I'm going to go out and I'm going to try to do some. I'm running a relay leg of a marathon in Akron, Ohio. It's a new race, just 2 years old. And last year I was injured and couldn't run, so I just kind of say, hey, I'm glad to be out here. I'm
right.
just glad to have a chance to get out there.
Yeah.
I think once you get into the sport, that's the way you feel, you know?
You know, Bill, when I look back on your career and a lot of the things that I've read over the years, I mean, you lived it and breathed it and probably still do 24/7. I mean, if you're stuck at the airport, you're at JFK and you've got a two-hour run plan, you'd run the access roads of the airport just to get your two-hour run in. Or if you finished a run, you were always thinking, how can I recover from this run? What would I need to get my legs up? I mean, was there a moment that went by that you weren't thinking about how do I recover from this run? When is my next run? Am I ready for that next race?
Yeah, I was very focused on my racing. I did about 25 races a year. And I guess.
There's Frank Shorter.
There's
again.
Frank again.
Frank
I mean,
again.
He's really not happy right there.
What's that?
Frank Shorter, your dog.
Yeah, that's my dog. Yeah, I got actually got my dog, Kiwi, from a good buddy, one of America's top women runners, marathoners, Patty Catalano, now Patty Dillon.
Oh, okay,
yeah.
Wow.
And she's not a training partner, but she's my walking partner. When I run once a day now, so that's about it. You,
well,
know,
you run
I'm
once
more
a day.
I'm more of an average runner these days. I still like to compete in age group running, and when I come out to Orange County December 4th and 5th,
right.
I'm going to the expo in the afternoon, and I'll do the half marathon there. But I'll be trying to compete. I'm pretty sure I'll be trying to do my best in the age 55 to 59.
Hey, Bill, as Bob was saying, how much do you focus on recovery, and has that focus changed over the years? I mean, you were probably once all-consumed by getting recovered for that next workout,
and now
you're older, so how has that changed?
Paul, the main change is I don't train, I don't run twice a day. I do run, I'm a pretty compulsive runner. I'm out there like almost every day. Last year I had my first serious injury, though, and that got me into trying to swim. And I actually went swimming yesterday for the first time in a while. But it's hard to change old habits. It really is hard. I'm starting to read about some other older runners because it's hard to determine how much can you run as an older person, like
right.
over the age of 40 or 50, 60, 70. How much can you work out? We know that people are capable of much more than we ever thought they were capable of. That you can be tremendously fit all your life. That was never understood before. But I think it's an individual kind of a journey, and that there are no hard and fast rules. You do need to recover, and the recovery demands are much higher as you get older, you know. So maybe you do some more cross-training. Maybe you do some walking, some swimming, some biking. You find what you love, and you go for it in that, you know.
Bill, how can you divide up the different decades through your running and maybe characterize each, say, your 20s and then your 30s and your 40s and your 50s? I mean, a lot of our listeners obviously span those generations. And, you know, what do you feel like characterizes each and how it's changed for you over the years?
Well, I got into marathoning. I did cross-country and track as a younger person, got into road racing and marathoning post-collegiately in my 20s and my 30s, and you know, competed around the world, that sort of thing. As I hit my 40s, don't get too many invitations to international races at 40, but I still tried to win the big races like the Boston Masters or something. I took second there 1 year. I retired from marathoning, actually, in 1992, some years back here. I ran the 100th in 96, but I became more of a half marathoner, became my focus.
Right.
From those years on.
Just a better return.
And I just want to kind of, like many runners, we all are kind of endurance sports athletes. We say, well, I just want to avoid injuries. I want to stay fit. And that becomes overriding. You know, you want to keep, you want to get out there with your friends, you know, and do what you did before, but it isn't so much competition as much. It's different. You still want to compete, but there's other parts to life, too.
Sure.
You know?
Bill, do you know how many races you've done?
Hello?
Billy, do you know how many races you have done over the years?
I do about 25 a year.
Uh-huh.
25 races a year?
Yeah, 25 races a year.
That's amazing.
I've done, I think, 22 or 3 this year.
Wow.
25 to go, and I've probably done something like 700 or 800 races, you know, in my life. About 50 marathons I finished by the time I was 40. From age 25 to age 40 in 15 years. So I did a lot of marathoning. And maybe that's why I'm not as intense, you know, to do the marathon. I like the half. I can be,
sure.
If I go to an event like the Orange County Marathon or Akron this weekend or whatever, I'm content to cheer on these new runners. You know, I take my hat off to them because they're working hard, and many of them don't have coach. I hope that the folks that are out there that maybe listening to the show will team up with a group like Team in Training or a coach like Bill Sumner in California. And because once you do that and you have your training partners, nothing can stop you then. You know,
right.
You're going to stay with us for life.
Now, Bill, another thing I wanted to ask you about was obviously a lot of your background is cross country, and I'm sure you've done so much of your training on trails just because you know how good it is for you.
Uh-huh.
One of my concerns is with all the training, marathon training programs which are out there, which are great, bringing new people in, but a lot of them focus on running the pavement. And then a lot of these folks who do their first marathon, by the time they get there, you see them with the knee braces on, and you see them afterwards, and you know there's a good chance they're not coming back. So what we've tried to do is encourage people to definitely train as a group, but try to get off the roads if you can. You find
the same thing? Yeah, I agree with you 100%. I would say asphalt is for walking or for bikes, maybe.
Yeah.
Concrete is for cars, and grass and dirt are what we are made to move on. And your legs get stronger. You can actually run better, I believe, on the flat asphalt roads. When you train on grass and dirt, I think it protects you from injury. I mean,
right.
Look at the Kenyans who train a lot on dirt. They do very well on the roads. I'm sure they practice some on the roads. You've got to get some of that contact, get your legs used to the asphalt a bit. But I think a mixture is a smart move.
Now, Bill, it also sounds like that you're doing a little bit of swimming,
and you've got a little bit of running background. So when are we going to see you jumping into a triathlon?
Exactly. That's I think, as soon as I heard him say swimming, I thought, you know what? Bill's going to do a triathlon.
We got a new career for you, buddy. You'd be competitive.
And
I think you'd
be shocked. You'd be shocked at how much cycling helps your running legs.
Oh, my God. Well, you know what's interesting? I had you remember Lisa Weidenbach, Lisa Rainsberger. Lisa, who was, I think, four times, she was the fourth place finisher at the Olympic marathon trials.
Yes.
After 96, when she didn't make the team for the marathon, she decided to get into triathlon.
Yeah.
And we talked a number of times as she got into the sport. And instead of running 80 miles a week, her running went down to 40 miles a week. But she said she was always, she used to always be sore when she was running 80 a week. When she was running 40 and cycling and swimming, her running was just as good without the pounding of the running. So
I believe that's probably true. And I think Lisa had a swimming background before she became a competitive marathoner.
Yes, no question. She was actually Olympic trials and swimming in 80 when they didn't go anywhere. Yeah.
So I think she has the talent there and the technical skill. And I guess you can learn. I mean, my swimming is so rudimentary, but I always feel better after I swim.
I know.
I always felt better. I never have been a cyclist out on the roads,
right?
You know, other than going with my kids a little bit, a
right.
few miles and that sort of thing. But after I got injured last summer, a year ago, I bought an exercise bike, and this winter I expect to do it, but I love just the simple sport of running, and I take my hat off to the triathletes, you know. I take my hat off to them because I have a glimpse as a fellow endurance athlete, you know, an understanding of what they're doing.
So we're not going to see you put the helmet on anytime soon. I think
it doesn't
sound
like
what he's saying is Paula. He's not going to be joining Paula and coming over to Kona and doing the Ironman.
Hey, Bill, what was your injury? What exactly happened last year?
Kind of crazy. I actually broke my tibia, my right leg.
Oof.
Yeah, it's kind of a bad advertisement for running, maybe. Well, not really. I was out on a run, and
you got to stop smoking too, Bill.
Yeah,
you got to cut back on those cigarettes.
You know? I got back into those Winstons. But,
that's great.
Crazy. But that was pretty devastating because I had never had in 40 years of running and probably running, I probably run 150,000 miles in my life. I'm like an old car, you know.
That's a good advertisement for running.
There you go.
I'm like an old car kind of putting along. But I was stunned to get this injury, but I discovered that I have just kind of a family tendency to thin bones and everything. My mom is a little osteoporosis.
Right.
So I'm just started taking medication for that, you know. And so I guess I'm truly an older runner now, you know. But hopefully that was a one-time thing, you know. But injuries are part of sports, I think.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's part of trying to do your best. We're not made of steel or something. We're going to get some little injuries. Thank God most of them in running are what Dr. George Sheehan called injuries of excellence. And they're minor things like little strains and things like that we can get rid of pretty easily.
So, Bill, have you incorporated strength training since that injury and to help with your bone density?
Well, you know what? I've had other people tell me that. And I did do the bike for a while. And I ran in the pool, you know.
Yeah.
But I guess the best thing would be to go and use the machines. And
They do a little actual resistance
weight training.
I think I'm going to try that this fall and winter.
No way. You've never done that before?
I've never done that. Never for my legs.
Oh, Bill, come on. I mean, at your age, you would benefit so much from that.
God.
Not just injury prevention, but from performance.
You know what, Bill? When you're out here in December, we got to get you down here and Huddle will take you through a program.
Or
Huddle
whoever. Anybody could do it. I'm sure you have great people out there.
Right. But they can show you a great program here.
Yeah. Very
simple. I always used light weights as a young person, you know.
Right. Yeah.
And all my life I've done that mainly for the arms and you know, kind of you always feel better. You run a little stronger.
You look so huge anyway. I mean,
you
got that big upper body.
Now I guess I've got to learn, you know, from my weaknesses there and try to change a little bit, you know.
Yeah.
Good. Hey, Bill, first of all, we're so grateful that you took some time
Honored.
To spend with us.
Yeah.
It's going to be we're very excited about this. And second of all, when you're out here, we'll see you at Orange County Marathon, December 5th, and you'll be here 4th for the Expo. And again, it's OC for the OC Marathon and Half Marathon and Kids Event and 5K.
Mm-hmm.
There, you call 949-476-7076, info@calcoasttrack.com or ocmarathon.com to sign up. And I know they've, last time I heard, I think there are about 3,000 entrants.
Wow.
Yeah, so
wow.
First
so
time
you gotta,
event,
you got to get
that's
in gonna there.
That's
going to
be huge.
Yeah,
and Bill, so you'll be there on Saturday signing some autographs and hanging out with folks.
Yeah, I've got a, actually I wrote a book with a guy named Scott Douglas.
Uh-huh, absolutely.
Called Idiot's Guide to Running, so I'll bring my crazy book and
love
we'll
it.
All be kind of we'll go out and we'll have a great time together.
The Idiot's sure. Guide to Running. It sounds like it's written for us, Babbitt.
I know it is. Bill Rogers, thank you so much for taking time.
Bill, thanks a lot.
Thanks, Bob and Paul. It's been great talking to you. You've got a great show.
Hey, right. Thanks, boy.
Thanks very much.
We'll catch you when you're out here.
See you on the road there, okay?
All right, buddy.
Good,
take
Bill.
Care.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Okay.